Hey, hockey heads, get ready for the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Each game day, answer four questions. Pick the winning team, guess if points will be over or under, predict the first goal, and choose the highest scoring period. Daily winners snag gift cards, while each round's champs pocket cold, hard cash. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess. It's fast, it's fun, and it's all about hockey. Let's go!
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Jim Jackson, TV voice of the Flyers. You're watching Nasty Knuckles.
Listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your hosts, Derek Nasty Settemeyer and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What's happening, Nasty?
What's up, Regalia? It's opening night tonight in Flyerland, baby.
We've been waiting a long time.
Seems like a really long time.
Yeah, are you excited or what?
I am. I'm pumped up, man.
What are you thinking?
What do you think I'm going to say? I'm going to say we're going with a W.
Of course.
Carter's going to stop the biscuit, and the boys are going to put a couple in their net. And a little Jizzy's going to go home. Jack Hughes, we heard that's his nickname. That's a tough one, but that's what we were told.
He'll be disappointed at home with a big loss.
Send the Devils right back up the turnpike.
Yeah.
With a loss on their end and a W on ours.
Yeah, I like to think that's the truth. What do you think about Torts? Any sort of antics behind the bench? Think the game one or what? What do you
think? I think he's going to be wearing a sweater vest.
Yeah.
And he's a cool off beard.
Yes. And he's going to be calm, I think.
You think so? Calm?
I don't think he's going to be losing his mind.
Not day one.
I think he's.
What if there's a massive brain fart? What do you think is going to happen?
He might grab
calm,
some
cool
water.
Torts?
Yeah, I think he's going to be calm, honestly. Like, I don't think he's going to be going crazy unless. I mean, it gets out of hand, which I don't see it getting out of hand.
I hope not. I'm just kind of hoping
Brooksy makes the trip down the guy from the Rangers, the reporter.
Yeah, right.
I don't even know his first name. I apologize.
Herb?
I don't know his name, but no, not Herb. Jesus. Anyway, Cam Atkinson's out of line tonight.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, we had heard he may have been a little banged up. He's out. That's tough. And obviously, we know about Coots.
But a swing with Beezer coming back in the lineup.
Yes, exactly.
That's huge.
That's good news. That's really good news.
Yeah, really good news.
They weren't expecting him for, another couple weeks or so?
Yeah.
So that's
surprised
huge.
To see that.
Yeah. So I'm pretty. That's actually a big plus because, having Cam out and Coots, as we knew, he was going to be out anyway, but to get Beezer back is nice.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, looking forward to tonight and see how this thing shapes up. And I wanted to get your opinion on the waving of Zach McEwen and being sent down.
Makes me sad. I love.
Yeah,
that guy,
I know.
Man.
I know. I was a little disappointed. I didn't see any camp, and the rumblings on the street was that he had a little bit of a suspect camp. But I think we talked about this before when they signed Delorier.
Yeah,
it's kind of. Questioning where he fit in, and then they landed up signing him, RFA. But
right,
I just
thought there'd be room for him.
I thought so
I
too.
I love what he brings to the team on and off the ice. I mean, what a great guy! And
yeah,
I know the boys love him. But I guess he goes down there, works his bag off, and good things will happen for him because he's a great guy. And I actually saw the one game I did see. I thought he played well, but I didn't see everything.
Yeah.
Like you're saying. But I was a little disappointed, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, me too.
Not going to lie. I was very disappointed to not see him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, and then a little bit on a different note, seeing Wayne Simmons' name coming up on the waiver wire, and obviously I believe he's cleared now, but what were your thoughts originally when you saw that? Was there, do you think there's any chance that the Flyers maybe took a stab at him just to bring that culture? And
that would be great.
You know they're facing? Yeah.
That would be great, obviously, and I think, obviously, Philadelphia would love it, every fan. But I was just kind of sad, too, for him.
Yeah, you know, I know, like, me too, yeah. I mean,
just what a warrior, what a good team
what
player.
What a story, yeah. Wayne Simmons, man.
I mean, this guy, book. It's hard for me to, and I'm not doing the numbers, I don't know, I'm not a GM and all that stuff and the cap, but, like, I just, I'm not. Not today. I could do a lot. I'm pretty... You're actually maybe right. I probably am. No, but I just find it hard to believe you can't make room for him.
Yeah, like, no, right?
If even if he's not in the lineup every night, like, who's better than him to be there with your team?
That's what I'm thinking. This is a glue guy. Just having him around is important.
I was hoping, you know, for him, and I know he still gets to stay at home. Maybe, and, you know,
yeah, right.
I
that's
talked
a good
to
point.
Wayne. He. You know, maybe that's
he. Yeah, he might have wanted it that way. Honestly, where he's at
family,
in his career,
you know,
for sure. Yeah, you think of it.
But I was again. He could have said, "Hey, listen, I'm fine staying here." But I was shocked that not one team would want to take him.
Yeah,
just for the player he is and the person he is and teammate he is. You know, as far as that goes. But
yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's unfortunate, but again, we don't know the whole story and his situation, so there could be some underlying conversations around.
Yes,
not actively trying to shop him around too much, so he could stay in Toronto and just kind of finish up his career
right
around there. But you know, when I first saw that, I was like, man, this could be a nice PR piece for the Flyers and showing the fan base that you know, we're again understanding where he is at in his career, but nonetheless knowing what he brings you know every single night would be a nice little carrot to dangle. But understanding that it might not just might not fit right now,
right? May not, but you know, for a guy that you know used to top power play,
right?
Everything he did here in Philadelphia, I don't think he ever should have left here or been forced to leave here, but that's just my opinion. You know, he's taken that transition as a lot of older guys can't handle.
Yeah.
Being like, I don't want to say demoted, but you know.
Yeah, taking a lesser role.
Just taking a lesser role, but you talk about a guy that knows his role and did whatever the team needed him to do, and I'm talking about you know, the physical play, the physical, you know, the fighting, which he seemed to be fighting more.
100% he was.
Which, to me, I'm like, Simmer, you don't have to do that anymore, but that's not him.
Yeah.
He's standing up for his teammates. He's going to do what's best for the team.
Absolutely.
And I just, that stinks. I wish he was with the team, with Toronto, with the big boys, because they got a good team. They got a shot this year, people are saying. So we'll see. I'm not going to get that far ahead of ourselves, but.
Yeah, we'll wish him the best.
Yeah, for sure.
And we got some interesting news for next week. Hey, you're heading to Wash.
Yeah, we're heading down to Washington. We have a couple of different places with the Tovey stick.
Yeah.
Some players interested in that. I think they've been seeing my men's league clips. Oh. Boy, that puck's just coming off that
it must be.
Carbon blade.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. Jesus, do not watch that because no one will want to use it.
Backhand sauce.
Now that's something that could be done. But, you know, of course, I got my great buddies Debo and Baller putting up one turnover I had. I actually looked like I was going to break my neck there. You will pay. I got a lot of crap from that.
Yeah,
boys
well,
are all
it happens.
Yeah, it does happen.
It happens. A little brain fart now.
The guy, I said, hey, at least you can thank me. I told the guy.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, you're welcome.
Yeah.
You're welcome. I didn't see you there backing me up anywhere.
Yeah, well, probably on the bench. Hydrating.
Probably.
Yeah.
but no, seriously, that's going to be exciting. We have a couple different places where the interest in this stick, which we knew was going to happen, is really taking off, and it's exciting.
Yeah, and a couple guys that have put up some numbers in the NHL that are interested in
look at it,
rocking it. So it'll be fun, interesting to see how this goes, but I think this is a year for Toby.
I do too.
Will be seeing some NHL action this year, in my opinion.
It has to. I can't just... I never played, but I've been dealing with sticks for years, and this thing is unbelievable. Man.
Yeah.
The feel of it, and we'll see. We'll see what happens. I don't want to jinx anything, 100%. But it should be great.
We will keep you guys tuned in on how it goes for sure next week when we record our next episode.
Yes.
And we got a couple new sponsors too, Nas.
Yes, we do. I was going to say, I might have myself one of those clear crushes on the way down to wash. Maybe a couple.
Have a little cooler.
One.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I was going to say. Cooler. Yeah. So our friends at Clear Rum, sponsors of the Phillies, now in Chickies and Pete's, and actually done a hell of a job in the last 6 months penetrating the tri-state area. So
see it everywhere.
I'll tell you what, awesome. They've done a hell of a job, getting it out there and, really focusing on the sports world, but, they're sports fans, Flyer fans, Philly fans, Eagle fans. So they're trying to work through sports and, naturally Nasty Knuckles is a perfect fit
for sure.
So check them out at clearrum.com. And then, one of my business partners, good friend, Britt Mazzagatti and his commercial.
I know Britt. You know Britt. A little snake in the cooler one day. We might have to pull that footy up.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, so DLI Commercial, National Construction Company.
Yes.
Now official sponsor of Nasty Knuckles. So check them out at DLICommercial.com. Happy to have you guys on board.
Yes.
Absolutely. Sure. Appreciate the support. And we will be talking more about these guys as we cruise through the season. Look forward to working with them throughout this 2022-23 season.
Yes.
Very exciting activations down the road, I'm sure.
Yes.
Absolutely. And I think we're ready to rock here, Nast.
You want to talk to JJ?
JJ.
Jim Jackson?
Episode 89.
Let's go.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. And I must say, in a pleasant good evening, because we have one of our favorite people in studio, play-by-play announcer for the Philadelphia Flyers for the last 26 years on TV, Mr. Jim Jackson.
How are you, Nest?
I'm doing Riley. Great, man.
It's about time I did this. I've been putting this off for various reasons. Very happy to be here.
Yeah, we chased you down for over a year.
I know, you're a busy man.
Very high maintenance, I know. I mean, it's funny you say pleasant good evening. I'm so boring. That is my signature phrase, a pleasant good evening. Can it be any more boring a signature phrase
It's not. I mean, I'm going to tell you why I said that, because AP and Vinny, the video coaches with the Flyers, we would always come in and they would be like, before we go out, I never told you this, be like, hey, real quick, and they would go back to the game before, or when you guys were coming, before I'd go out to the bench, you got to hear it.
Hey, really?
And a pleasant good evening. That's hilarious. Yeah, and then I'd run out, and then I'd go out to the bench. We always
I should have thrown a curveball one game.
Yeah, I know, right?
I'm surprised they didn't tell you, or I should have told you.
Yes.
You know, I'd be like,
next game, say, hey, hi,
No, but I actually love it. I love it. That's why I said that. Man, what is going on? How was your summer?
It was good. I mean, I had some health issues, nothing major, but got on a vacation with my family to L.A., which I actually wasn't necessarily thinking it was going to be great. It was awesome. I mean, there was so much to do out there. And also just took it easy, which I've been able to do the last couple summers, which has been fun.
Nice. Jumped in your pool?
Occasionally,
You forgot you had it.
We were closing that pool today, in fact.
Oh, I closed mine last week.
My wife, Bernie, was going to be here, actually. She said you had invited her.
Yes, I did.
And she would have been here, but they're closing the pool, and I said, you got to stay.
Priorities.
Well, I'll tell you what. I love your wife. We've been friends. I've known you, obviously, since I got here way back in 94. She's tougher than you, Riggs.
She is tough.
She's got a hook and a jab.
Oh, yeah,
her
right?
Her father was a boxing referee.
Oh,
yes. Hall of Fame.
Yes. Okay. No, I did not know that.
Look out.
He boxed, and he taught her how to box.
So at Check It for Charity, I got to see her. And I see her once in a while just quickly in passing, but I got to see her. We stood there and talked for like 45 minutes. And I never knew that about her, that her dad did that. And she's so funny. She was telling me, she's like, I got a better left hook than half of you guys in here. And I'm I believe it. And she was dead serious. Like you said, she does. And I said, you should give Riles one just to wake him up. He hasn't had
one. We should be the next guest. Yeah. Next guest.
I think my wife is smart enough to pick her. Riley would not.
I don't know. A buck 80 these days.
Yeah,
she might have a little bit.
Yeah, you are looking as menacing, but yeah. you probably still have the.
What is it? The
right.
Man bun? Does it make him look less tough?
Yeah. A quick story. Skin and bones. I'm dating my wife, right? I just started dating her. I'm working at a radio station. And she had a sidekick. They'd go out and get into all kinds of things, right? And her friend was firing spitballs at a friend, and the DJ at the club happened to walk in between and got hit with a spitball, right? So he's really ticked, and he thought my wife did it, when in reality it was her friend. But anyhow, he comes right at my wife. You can't do that.
No.
You just can't. And this is legendary. He was in a club, and he was a DJ on the radio, but he was DJing at the club that night. And she just... Two punch combination and down he went, right?
No way, the old spitball.
So it became kind of legendary. And I go to work at another radio station. And actually, he worked there, but on the other side, the FM. And the people came over to me, and I guess word had gotten around. I was dating her. And it was like, do you know that you're dating the girl who did that to the guy's name? You know, I won't say what his name was. And I go, yeah, I think it's great. Yeah.
Standing a little taller.
Yeah, don't
right?
don't yeah. mess with Bernie. Oh. But she loves you to death.
Oh,
and
love
we
her.
Do She's... appreciate everything you've done for our son. Oh. He's a hockey player, and you've been great to him. So
he's awesome. Both your kids, Deanna and Johnny, are the two of the nicest kids you ever meet. They're awesome.
Very proud of them. Very
yeah,
proud.
You should be. They're good kids. They're awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, I can tell them to stop watching this podcast from this point on.
Yeah, right. That's it.
I'm actually have some hats being made for his
yes,
team up there.
Yes, yeah, his coach is all for that.
Oh, yeah? Cool.
Yes, coach yep, all yep. for that.
I like
yeah,
that.
Nazareth.
They should be done.
The Golden Flyers. Wouldn't you know he ends up playing for the team
yeah,
of the
right.
Flyers?
That's awesome.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, let's talk some Flyers hockey. Yes. Obviously, preseason is wrapped up now, and camp is obviously wrapped up as well, getting ready for the regular season. What are your thoughts on leading up to the regular season and even leading up to training camp with the off-season moves and everything?
Yeah, really looking forward to seeing what John Tortorella would do with this team. And the first day of camp, no pucks, just skating was interesting. I've never seen that. I mean, 30 right. years between radio and television, and I've never seen a no pucks practice first day of camp. The guys expected it, so it wasn't a surprise, and I didn't see any complaints. There were some players, a couple that were, letting
belly up.
Some stuff up. Yeah,
yeah.
But his message is, it's more as much about the physical, although he's certainly all about physical conditioning, but also about the mental toughness of it, right?
Sure,
right.
And there were a couple guys who really struggled, but they made it through. And to him, that was what it was all about. Not that you looked great doing it, but that you got through it. So I thought that was important and a great start to camp. But unfortunately, I listed like five goals on YouTube that I had for camp. And the fifth one I said with no injuries, and then I had to amend that because the Couturier news came out before camp. So I'd say no more injuries, but there have been more injuries. So he hasn't been able to do as much of the conditioning as he wanted because he thought maybe that was having something to do with the injuries perhaps, or maybe just because the guys were getting so nicked up. So that's been a downer because we've, the Cam Atkinsons, the Carter Harts, Ivan Provorovs, Rasmus Ristolainen, and I can go right down the list, Artem Anisimov, who might have made this team, all injured right during camp. So that's been tough, and they're still waiting on Farabee skating. But so they've got a lot of guys and some key guys that are nicked up already. That's the negative side.
Mm-hmm.
But they got to see a lot of the young players as a result, some that maybe aren't quite ready, that maybe they thought were, some that, like Noah Cates, who is absolutely tremendous, that I think has made the team and, in fact, could play a key role. Samuel Ersson has made a name for himself in goal, and with some of the injuries there, he might be in the big club, which I don't think anybody was expecting. So there are some positives, but in general, really from a system standpoint, it's just starting.
Yeah.
Because he didn't really have time to get into the systems before they played their six preseason games in 11 or 12 days. Now he's got more than a week between the last preseason game and the first regular season game, and he can use that to go over power play, penalty kill, forecheck, backcheck, all the systems. And I don't think we're really going to see that until the regular season starts. And then, really, he said maybe into mid-November before it really catches with the team and its muscle memory and all that. So we're going to probably need a little patience early in the season, get healthy, get the system in, and then we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's interesting that we're almost kind of like back to where we were last year in the sense of like the injuries and you know what I mean, starting off slowly and you know, obviously you got a new bench boss that is trying to create a new culture for the team, but between the work and the systems, it's going to take some time, and you got to get these healthy bodies back, otherwise it's going to be more of the same, I feel. And unfortunately, you know, no one wants to start the season off dropping games, and I think on the other side of it, they're going to learn how to lose games with an attitude, you know, in the proper way, you know, the way that we lost games last year and maybe the previous year. But, you know, losing with an attitude and with that dig in. But it'll be interesting how this thing fires up. You know, I was a little bit kind of disappointed too, just the way this thing started off with the injuries and how the preseason lined up turning out, you know, as far as wins and losses go. But it will be interesting. There's certainly going to be a different type of attitude. There's no question.
No doubt. And the culture is going to change.
Yeah.
They may struggle scoring goals. I mean, if they can get Coots back, which the good news is the early reports that he was done for the year don't seem to be accurate. You know, that's going to help. Obviously, Farabee would be a big help once he can take contact. And then if Konechny, Atkinson, Hayes, those guys are healthy. And then you throw in Cates and some of the young guys, Morgan Frost. These guys have to really what it comes down to, guys, in general, is everybody has to be better than they were last year, really the last 2 years. And you're hoping that Tortorella and his coaching staff, he's got some good assistants, will bring that along, because they didn't make a ton of moves. I mean, Tony D'Angelo, Nick Delorier, which I think are definitely going to help the team. D'Angelo certainly in the power play. Delorier just from the culture and the not going away that you talked about. And then you have some young guys that might be part of the mix now too. But generally, your Travis Konechny's, your Ivan Provorov's, Travis Sanheim made a lot of strides last year, has to continue to do that. These players have to be better, and the veterans. You know, Kevin Hayes, I think, will be better. Obviously, he had physical issues and just a, you know, an awful situation last year with his brother, so I think he'll be in a better place. And then some of the other veterans, too. We'll see. Hockey's an interesting thing because I think of all the sports, football and hockey are the two where the coach probably has the most to do with how the team plays. Baseball is really an individual sport. Manager can maybe create an atmosphere, as I think Rob Thomson has done with the Phillies, but create an atmosphere that helps the club out. But really, it's down to pitcher versus hitter and, you know, that kind of thing. And basketball is so individual in terms of there's not that many players in the team. You know, your stars have to be great and you win. But football and hockey are so team. Everything plays are orchestrated. You have so many plays. Football, you have so many players on a play that have to, you know, combine to do something well. And hockey is just so fast that it takes such coordination. So I really think systems and so forth with those two sports, the coaches can have a major impact. So John Tortorella, I think, eventually will have that kind of impact. But they've got to get healthier. They, you know, I think even he's probably disappointed with the fact that they've had so many players get nicked up in this camp already. So, and they've made changes to the staff. I mean, I don't think the injuries were the fault of the staff, but that tends to happen when you have a ton of injuries. They're looking into all the things you can do as far as rehab and making that better. They're doing whatever they can to try to help with the health issue, but some of it's just plain old luck.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, 100%.
And, you know, you just hope that they're going to be a healthier bunch, because without health, all this other stuff kind of goes out the window.
That's the truth.
Last year, 2 years ago, they lost some terrible games. I mean, got blown. I remember the game in New York. I mean, I'll never forget that. And some of the others. Last year was not quite like that. I did some numbers. It was something like 85% of the games, they were within a goal in the third period. They just couldn't get over that hump. They'd either allow a goal and lose a game that was tied or a one-goal lead, or they just couldn't come up with that goal and they were down a goal. But they were in games last year despite all the injuries. So that led me to have hope that they could really turn this around. But then they traded Claude Giroux, and that, you know, they didn't really replace G. So that part of it, I'm not sure where the offense is going to come from.
Yeah.
If they had replaced his offense, I think you're talking about now this team where it was a couple years ago, and they played really good hockey for a long stretch from mid-November to the pause. They were one of the better teams in the NHL. And maybe they can build off of that and get a structure around Carter Hart, who I still think can be an elite goaltender. And, you know, all of a sudden – you're not as far away as you thought. But now, without that offense being replaced, it's, to me, a question of will they have enough offense. I do think, as you guys, I know we agree on this, they're going to be harder to play against. They're going to play more of a Flyers brand of hockey that we all like. They're going to be tough physical. They're going to, I think, block a lot of shots. They're going to play from the goaltender out. A lot of things that will keep the games closer. But are they going to be able to come up with those goals to win some of those tight games? Is the power play going to help them?
Yeah.
That's a huge part of it, too. You know, that's really, I think, what they need to find. Where's this offense coming from? And since they didn't really replace G's offense, that's got to come from Tony DeAngelo helping the power play, yes, but also, as I said earlier, the Konechnys and those players.
Yeah, all the guys are on the shelf.
Scoring, and, getting back to where they were, or even better.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We talked about it a little bit. It's more disappointing. We traded G that we didn't. Obviously, Johnny Gaudreau, everyone and their brother wanted him to come here. What a feel-good story it would be, and plus, he's a hell of a hockey player. But wasn't able to get done, so you're right. Like, we talked about this before. It's got to be a collected, like, effort, but it's not that easy when you don't have a guy like G or Johnny or someone like that, not putting any of our guys down because there's great players. I'm looking for Morgan Frost to really be good on the power play this year and kind of step up. You know, he's had some bad luck with injuries,
for
too.
Sure.
He's a great kid, and I really think he's a good hockey player.
Yeah. No, for sure. You mean you brought up the lack of scoring, and I fully agree. You haven't replaced those points in it. It's going to have to come from the guys that were banged up last season, you know, and everyone's got to step up. Even guys that were playing, everyone needs to step up. I'm still not sure how to get those extra goals that, you know, like you said, like the extra goal in the third period, you know, when you have a guy like G or Johnny Gaudreau or one of those go-to guys, generally the guys you lean on to score you those types of goals. But with Torts and the things we've talked about here, like the culture, it's going to have to trend towards defending better, right? It's going to really have to be, you know, taking care of the home plate, D zone, getting the saves, and then being very strategic with your offensive opportunities and obviously scoring, because there's not going to be a ton of offense.
No, as he said before the last preseason game, they're going to have to grind out wins.
They
are. And his teams have done that in the past.
Sure.
So
yeah.
I can't imagine a John Tortorella coach team being non-competitive.
Yeah, right.
Bro, I just can't.
No.
Even if they do get more injuries, he's going to find a way to be in 2-1 games. But there's going to be these 1-1 or 2-2 games in the third period, and who's going to get that goal?
Yeah.
The power play is key. They have some weapons on them. Cam Atkinson could be a big weapon on the power play. Maybe Joel Farabee turns into that kind of weapon on the power play.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have distributors, and Tony's from the top going to be one of those. So if you think about last year, they had the worst power play in the league statistically. And, you know, if you turn that into maybe 15th or 16th in the middle of the pack, you know, I'm not saying they're going to go to the top of the power play, just in the middle of the pack, they win 5 or 6 more games right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they lost a lot of games by a goal or 2 goals with an empty net or that kind of thing. So, it's not as far. I mean, I know we've all been through the summer and in social media, and I honestly can tell you that in 30 years here, this is the lowest expectations that I've sensed the fan base has for a Flyers team in my 30 years here.
Yep.
Maybe outside of the first year I came here, because they were in year 4. That was actually the 5th and final year of missing the playoffs 5 years in a row.
Oh, okay.
So but they had Eric Lindros on that team.
Yeah, right.
So I would say the expectations going into this year from the fan standpoint is as low as it's been in my 30 years here. That might prove to be a benefit in the long run. Because, you know, although I don't think he's going to go public with this too much, but Torts is going to probably take some of these clippings where these guys are saying they're the 32nd team in the NHL, and they think the Athletic just had the model they put out there had us right down near the bottom.
Did they really? Wow.
And you put those things out there, and it has to motivate them.
Yeah, players. Right. Use it as fuel.
Whereas the last 2 years, we went into the year with pretty high expectations. I mean, Chuck had gone out this past offseason and gotten Ryan Ellis. And, you know, we thought that was really going to take care of the problem on defense. And there was a lot of excitement. Cam Atkinson trade for Jake, that Cam was going to be the shooter that they had been missing. And, you know, it looked like it was going to be a really good season. So we had high expectations. It didn't work the last 2 years. And Now, this year we go in with low expectations. Maybe it goes in the other direction.
Yeah.
But I do think there is going to be that chip on the shoulder mentality with this team, where if national media, local media, fans, whatever, all say, you know, you suck, nobody likes to be told that. And right. Everybody loves to prove people wrong.
That's the truth.
In that regard, right? Yeah. So let's see if that works in the Flyers' favor. And I think Torts is the kind of coach who will manipulate that, for sure.
I agree. And you had a relationship with Torts, eh? You were telling us before we got on air.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, our very first year, his first year of coaching was my first year of professional broadcasting. I graduated from Syracuse, went back to work in my hometown of Utica, New York, and there was the ECHL now was the ACHL, was the Atlantic Coast Hockey League back then. And it wasn't much of a league, folks. It started with five teams, and a team folded. There were four left, so that meant everybody made the playoffs. So four teams, but we won our round, and John Tortorella was coaching the Virginia Lancers. I was announcing for the Mohawk Valley Comets. So we played in the finals that year. So I didn't necessarily know Torts back then, but he was the coach of the team. They won in seven games. That was notable for a lot of reasons. First of all, he was a great coach right from the get-go. That team had unbelievable record. The next year, they had an even better record. Before you knew it, he's onto the AHL and, you know, onto to Tampa and onto the NHL, and away he went. But that year, we played Game 7. Now, all year long, I was doing the games. I'd come down to the Lancelot Arena in Vinton, Virginia, to take we'd play there, and I'd do the games from their press box, which was at the end of the rink. Not optimal. But you're upstairs, and you're at least in a booth. So I arrive for Game 7 and expect to go to my usual location. I show up, and there's this setup, like another broadcast setup. I go, what's going on here? Oh, the local radio station's going to do tonight's game. They haven't done a game all year.
Yeah.
But they're going to do Game 7. So I said, so where am I going to do the game? And they pointed down to this cement landing, which, fine. It was down low, so I said, okay. So I go, and there was back then it was all done on phone line, so there was a phone line box there, and I look around, and behind me are seats where sit. And I'm like, are these seats not sold for tonight because you got me here? They said, oh, no, this is a sellout tonight. I said, well, I'm going to be standing right in front of these people. They said, yeah, don't worry about it. Okay. So I'm literally, it wasn't a great location. I'm looking at a goalie, right? So I'm at the end of the rink, but I'm looking out, and I'm low. So it's not a great location to begin with, but at least I can see the game. I'm by myself. I set up my equipment. I do the coach's show with Joe Selensky. He was the coach of our team, and he had moved over from the team that folded, bizarrely. I get back up to my location. I start doing the game. And before the game even started, during the warm-up, I'm hearing some catcalls from the fans behind me. Like, yeah, sit out in front and all that. And I'm like, your people put me here. I can't move. And they were all right in the beginning. But then, liquid refreshments.
Right.
And now they're starting to say in the middle of the first period, enough, get out of our way. And they're trying to call security. And I'm saying, no, you're not going to have any help there because I'm here because your organization put me here. Well, eventually, late in the first period, all of a sudden, I'm doing the game and I feel the cord get tugged and I'm pulled back. And a guy grabs me from behind and he's literally saying, you got to get out of the way. And I cut my mic and I said, listen, I can't move here. This is where I was put. We had a guy, Steve Plaskin was his name, a player. He was only about 5'8", I think, but he was really strong, and he was suspended. And he was down by our locker room, and these weren't huge buildings. He saw this happening. So he comes up and immediately grabs the guy, and I thought, all right, do I call the game or do I call?
Yeah.
I wasn't sure which to call. But he took care of the guy. But he wrestled with him and he stood there the rest of the game. I had a bodyguard for the rest of the broadcast. Wow, kind of player. I tell Torch that story. He just dies. I mean, Henry Brabham was the owner of the Lancers, right out of the Slapshot owner. I mean, he had his overcoat.
Yeah.
And that rink, eventually the roof caved in on it. But that was minor league hockey. That was my first year ACHL, and there was Torch. So here we are. I'm winding my broadcast career down maybe – more than a couple of years, but in Torts is, maybe his last stop of his coaching career. Here we are together, so we talk about that.
That's reunited. Pretty cool. Yeah. It's funny you said that, too, about Slapshot, because last weekend
I went
to Johnstown, PA for the first time.
Been there many times,
With the Philadelphia Rebels. Took a
congrats on that,
Yeah, thank you. Yes. But it was so cool because my dad had played a game in there. And I have a great picture of him, and he's playing against the two real brothers in real life.
Kyle's.
And they actually wore glasses.
Yes.
And you can see him in the picture. But they had this little Hall of Fame room, in there, but there were too many people in there. We had talked about maybe me doing a live, but there was like a bunch of people sitting in there. So I was like, next time I go.
I was in Slapshot.
What?
Yeah, I was in. I was an extra. The scene where the national anthem, you know,
Are you the one that came out and wiggled your...
No. And I was not the guy at the end of the... But Mike, what's the actor's name? Ankeen? I was not the stand-in.
No,
I was just in the crowd at the Utica Memorial Auditorium where the national anthem, the fight before...
Listen
to the blinking song. You couldn't see me or anything.
Oh,
but I was there.
That's cool.
That was awesome. I mean, that whole movie, Johnstown, it was done in rinks that I used to go to as a kid as a fan of the Mohawk Valley Comets, before that the Clinton Comets, the Utica Mohawk. All those teams that played in the various minor leagues out of Utica, those upstate New York arenas, Johnstown, and Binghamton was used, Utica, they were used for Slapshot. So was awesome.
Wow.
That movie, I just watch it and I crack up.
Yeah, you can't turn it off.
Oh, it's legendary.
You just can't turn it off. Yeah. And the best, we actually came back and won the game the other night in overtime. Yeah, it was awesome. And I get into the room. It's not like it was in a NHL. I don't just go right to the room. I had to get the water bottles, pick them up, you know. But clean and get the sticks and everything, get it back to the room. But when I walk in, now I can't think of the song that's like famous with Slapshot. I think it's at the end. But the boys, they're young, and they had that song.
Did they play, really?
Yeah, the
Slapshot. That's awesome.
I can't think of the name
Getting
of
the spirit.
Baller,
I can't either because the movie, they've changed sometimes the soundtrack for copyright reasons, I think.
Okay.
I think there was... there was an Elton John song, I think, in the original movie when they're in the bus, and now it's some other.
I don't know that.
So I think they've changed some of the things.
But it was funny, the kids had that song playing. I'm like, man, that's pretty good for, you know, the kids are young, right?
They even have knowledge of that.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. Yeah. So anyway, that was my first trip to Johnstown. I enjoyed it. But you talked about when you first started, you were in Utica, right, with the Devils.
Yeah. I was born in Cortland, but my family moved to Utica when I was like 6 months. So I basically was born and raised in Utica because I don't remember Cortland. And it's a great minor league hockey town. And I went to Syracuse for 4 years, great broadcast school. I think you guys had Timmy Saunders on recently.
Yep.
Just like him, I realized very early on I was not going to be an athlete. I recently told this story. it was kind of moment where you really understand you're not going to make it as an athlete. I'm playing JV football for the New York Mills Marauders, my high school, and I'm one of the subs. So I'm in eighth grade, I believe. I was young, and you know the subs, they just give you whatever equipment's left over. So I had a helmet that was too small. I mean, I got a big mug.
Yeah,
this is a big mug. So I had to jam my big head into the helmet. It was too small. My pants were too big, so they had to tape them, you know, so that they'd stand up. And I'm standing on the sideline, and we're playing at this old muddy field. My father came out to see me, so I'm like, God, I hope I at least get out on the field, right?
Yeah.
And lo and behold, somebody gets hurt. Jackson, get in there. I'm playing defensive back. And a couple plays go by, and they were run plays. Nothing happened. I tried to make it look like I was going to get in there and make a tackle. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, a pass play happens, and it's coming my way. And I actually read a play, right? It was a down and out, and I jump it, and I intercept the ball. And it looked great. And I see nothing but green grass and mud, whatever it was, in front of me, but like 40 yards to a touchdown. And I'm running, and I get to about the 30, and I feel the tape bust. So now I know.
Oh, no.
I know if I keep going, the pants are probably going to go all the way down, and it's going to be pretty embarrassing. I had a guy like 5 yards behind me. If I kind of slow down and let him catch me and he tackles me, you know, I can probably put it back together on the sideline and no one will notice. So what do you think I did? Did I go for the glory and the touchdown?
I think you did.
I didn't.
No.
I let him catch me, and he tackled me. And hey, I still had an interception.
Yeah, you did.
You know, and I never was fast, so I could just blame my lack of speed. But I just the thought of the pants going all the way down and me tripping over
eighth
him.
Eighth grade.
Being,
yeah, it just could have been
so
bad.
I couldn't do it. So, my father, I remember being with my father after that game, and there was another practice where I got hit and – I didn't even remember what happened, and it was like out of a movie scene. You're laying down, and all the people are standing around you. You see the sky behind him. I mean, what happened? You got knocked out.
Yeah.
And I said to my dad, it's just not going to make it. I'm not going to make it to the NFL, NHL, Major League Baseball, NBA. It's just not going to happen. I got to find another way. He goes, well, you're always talking about sports. How about broadcast? So I took his I he was right. My mom wanted me to be a veterinarian because he was.
Okay.
And just step into that.
Yep.
But my passion was always sports. So I had to find some way, and broadcasting seemed to be the way. So it was go to Syracuse. I went to Syracuse 4 years there. Your ambition grows even more. You did basketball, football, lacrosse. And I came back to my hometown, and I got a job at a radio station. I basically walked in and said, hey, let me hang around for a month. They let me do that. And I noticed their weekend sports talk show was – they didn't have a weekend sports talk show. They had a talk show during the week, news, talk, sports at night. And then on the weekends, they played Top 40 in and around a whole bunch of sporting events that they carried. And here I am just out of college. I basically walked in there to say, hey, can I hang around for a month? And I put together this written proposal. I said, how about a weekend talk show around your sporting events? It goes more with your format. And I put a written proposal together for the general manager, the program director, the news director, the sports director. And they went for it.
Wow.
Wow.
And who else to be the host but me, because I'm kind of there riding the board anyhow. It took care of any social life. It was noon to midnight, Saturday and Sunday. So bye-bye social life for a 22-year-old out of school. But I had a full-time job. They gave me 16 hours during the week just doing, you know, reporting and stuff. And I had a full-time job. And just to make my life story as quick as I can, about 7 or 8 months after that, Tim Roy, who was the sports director, by the way, has been the longtime voice of the Golden State Warriors. He did fine for himself. He went to Birmingham. And so who else to become sports director but me?
Right.
Oh, so now I'm doing ACHL hockey. I'm doing Division I basketball. At the time, Utica College was Division I. Larry Costello was the head coach of that team. If you people around here might remember him from the Warrior days and so forth. And then I'm doing high school football, the talk show. Oh, it's just great. I'm getting reps and reps. That's what you got to do as a young broadcaster. Yeah. And then about 9 months after that, the New Jersey Devils decided to move their AHL farm team from Portland, Maine to Utica, New York. We get the rights, and I'm now 23 years old, and I'm doing AHL hockey.
That's amazing. Wow.
And so those years, I did all 6 years the Utica Devils ever played. I had three coaches that I worked with. The first one was a guy by the name of Tommy McVee.
I know Mr. McVee.
Tommy McVee.
Yeah, the best voice ever.
My dad passed away just before I started with Tommy. So he really was my second dad, Tommy McVee.
Yeah.
And my very first trip with the team, the PR director tells me to meet the team at the Sanger Town Mall. There were two – Utica's not that big. There were two big malls in Utica. There's the Riverside Mall and the Sanger Town Mall. So their PR guy, I still remember his name. I won't say it. He's a little bit out there. But he says, yeah, meet the team at the Sanger Town Mall at 2 o'clock for the trip to Rochester for the very first game in the Utica Devils history. And so I said, okay. So I show up at about 1:30. I know Tommy McVee is kind of like Tom Coughlin, the old NFL coach time. 15 minutes early. You got to be there.
Yeah, right.
So I was there a half hour early. No cars, no players, no nothing around. And there weren't cell phones. I went inside, used a payphone. I said, I almost said his name.
Yeah.
There's no players here, and it's 1:30. So they must be coming from practice. They're probably just going to come in their cars all at once. 1:45, nothing. Something's going on here. So I go back inside, and I call again. He goes, oh, I'm sorry. It was the Riverside Mall. I said, oh, my God, I got to get my car. Get out there. He says, no, don't bother. The bus is coming to get you. I'm going, really? The whole bus with the entire team is going to come?
First game.
First game.
So I'm waiting. Here comes the bus. Of course, I'm here. The bus turns that way. So I get in my car, and I'm flashing the bus so that it'll pull over. Pulls over at a spot in the parking lot. I had this big blue case, Comrex case, with all the equipment back then. And I lug it out of my car, and the bus driver comes out. Bus driver was such a great guy. And I said, is he mad? He said, just a bit. And I said, oh, boy. So I get on the bus. Not a sound from the players, which I know. That's by design. And you know how you get on a bus, Tommy would sit in that first seat.
Yep.
So I put his foot right up over, so I had to, like, duck around his foot.
Yeah, of course.
And I get in, and I just get past his foot, and he goes, strike one. And I start, this is the first thing you don't do with Tommy, which I should have known. I start to explain, well, your PR guy told me, I don't care how you should know where we're being. Strike one, sit down. And every shopping, like, strip mall we went by between Utica and Rochester, the players, hey, JJ, maybe that's where you're supposed to meet us. And, of course, they gave me the, hello, JJ, that whole thing. So it was a great indoctrination. I did get strike two. I divulged a trade a couple years later that again, Pierre told me was done, that wasn't, and it got canceled.
Oh, no.
God.
I don't know if you ever had any kind. Kim Issel or Dave Meyer Sinishin, those are the two players traded, and it never happened. So he pulls me down to his office, and I figured it's been 2 years. Like, it was like 2.5 years later. Strike two.
You don't get a fresh start?
I never made it to strike three.
Wow.
And I honestly said that to Tommy when I made it to the NHL. And I he scouts for Boston still, I think, to this day. And I saw him in Anaheim. He scouts the West. And I went up. I said, Tommy, I never made it to strike three. He said, you didn't. And he was just great. The old-time legendary coach who coached well in the minors. He had some really bad NHL teams. And then he was replaced by Herb Brooks. So I got to spend a year with the legend, the author of The Miracle on Ice. What a year. What I can say about Herb is if there's a line right here that's between genius and insanity, he walked it every single day.
Really? Hey?
But I learned so much from it. I'll give you two stories. I could give you a third, but that one takes too long. The first one was very early. Again, it's the first road trip. Right. So I've had 3.5 to almost 4 years of Tommy McVee, who, when we lost, just shut up on the bus ride home.
Yeah.
If we won, beer, everybody, party.
Yeah.
But when it was black and white. When you win, everything's great. When you lose, everything sucks. So I was pretty much trained to live that way. Well, we lose to Binghamton. I think it was 8-3, our first game under Herb Brooks. And my memories of Herb Brooks at that point were the guy who was telling you to stick him in the throat on the bench during the Olympics and all that stuff. You know, and all the stuff he did to that team. And I'm thinking, he's probably even worse than Tommy.
Right.
When it comes to losses. So I sit in my seat and I'm like, he's last one on the bus. And I'm like, hoping he doesn't even look at me kind of thing. He comes over and sits on my side and puts his arm around me. He says, what'd you think of that one, kid? I'm like, loaded question, coach. Yeah. He goes, no, we lost, but there's lots of good signs. He was so positive.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, you're right. There were some good things. I didn't see any, but there were some good things. We did score 3 goals after the game was already decided. But, But anyhow, it became a pattern. You know, after losses, he'd get on the bus and he'd be happy. But when we won, he'd get on the bus grumpy as all get out.
Oh,
I mean, 4-2 win, we shouldn't have given up those 2 goals, and we should have had 8 goals. And he was miserable after wins. And it got to the point, literally, where I was hoping we'd lose games.
Because no
was
way, not bad.
But the method to his madness was, in his mind, he thought, when you win, your team will probably get too high.
Yeah.
So prevent that. And when you lose, they'll probably get too low. So now, I think he took it to an amazing extreme, but that was – his rationale, and I learned that, and you learn to deal with it. My other story for him is really funny because it really is the essence of Herb. So I only was with him for a year. We had our differences because there was one time where the Portland team had a whole bunch of guys sent down from the Bruins, and so their record was awful, but they had just gotten a whole bunch of reinforcements. So his whole pregame show with me was about, you can't look at this team's record, Jimmy. They're way better than their record. This is going to be a tough game. And so, I went in with that mentality. But the Devils jumped out to a 2-0 lead. And then we lost. It was like 6-2, whatever. So the other guy who did the games with me would do the pregame show from the studio, and then he'd listen to the game on the way in as he drove into the arena. He'd do the postgame show from the arena. So he interviews Herb after the game. And his question to Herb was, I was listening on the way in. It sounded like it was going to be an easy game, but what happened? That's all Herb had to hear. Because he thinks I was saying it was going to be an easy game.
Oh.
But what he was saying was it was 2-0, right?
Yeah.
But he didn't go through all that. So Herb said, really? You heard that on the radio? And Danny, my broadcast partner, was like, yeah. And, he had no idea. He was destroying me by saying that.
My God.
So Herb calls me the next day. He says, I got to talk to you before you get on the bus because it's a home-and-home series. And so he pulls me over. All the players are on the bus. We're standing outside. It's freezing. He says, you couldn't resist, could you? And I'm like, what are you talking about? He said, last night I told you that this was going to be a tough game. This team's loaded. They've got a whole bunch of NHL players in their roster. I said, we talked about that. We talked about that the whole broadcast. He goes, I don't think so. And he got on the bus, And he didn't say another word to me the entire bus ride. It's about a six-hour ride to Maine. We even got in an accident. We rear-ended a car. A car slams on the brakes. All I heard Herb say was, "We got him."
We're in one.
But through the whole thing, he wouldn't say a word to me.
No way.
And then I go down to do the coach's show with him, and he wouldn't do it. He said, I can't do it. After what happened last game, I can't do it. I'm still oblivious. I have no idea what he's mad about. But I said, well, understand, coach, that it's a sponsored show. I'll have to say, you know, he declined to do the show. He goes, no, just don't do the show. I said, no, it's sponsored. I have to say we don't have the coach. No, dude. And he's throwing F-bombs at me. There's people in the building looking like, what's going on here? And he's just going after me. And I did the show. He didn't do it. And I did say it on the air anyhow. Nothing on the bus ride home. We won the game, too. And then next home game, 3 or 4 days later probably, I say to Danny, he's like, weird. He's like pissed at me for some reason. And I don't even know what I said. And he goes, yeah, I don't know what it could be. And so I said, I don't even know if I should go down there to ask him to do the show. He goes, well, you might as well ask. I go down. I walk into his office. Hey, JJ, have a seat. Let's get ready to do the show. Like nothing ever happened. That was Herb.
Later
I found out, I'm not even sure how, but Danny had mentioned something to me, and then I found out why he thought I said it was going to be easy.
Yeah.
But he couldn't even understand. I tried to explain it to him. He didn't understand. So the other story, that's actually just leading up to, we had our differences, but I make it to the NHL the year after that. I have another year with Robbie Fatorik, who there's a whole bunch of stories with him. Just a great guy, and it's the reason I'm in Philadelphia. Herb makes it back to the NHL as coach of the Penguins.
Right.
And we're playing them in the playoffs, and and I hadn't even had a chance to catch up to him. But when I got to the NHL, I don't want to bury the lead here, he sent me this beautiful letter congratulating me. I mean, Tommy was my second dad. Robbie was the one who gave me some advice, which got me here. I didn't get letters from them, but I got a letter from Herb Brooks, and it meant a lot to me, and I kept it, and it meant a lot. And so then several years later, he's back in the NHL, and he's doing a press conference up there, and I'm with Coatsy and Timmy and Dorney, and we're kind of standing in the back, and he looks over at us in the middle of the press conference and gives me a wink and a thumbs up, and I'm like bursting with pride.
Yeah.
The author of The Miracle on Ice remembers me, and this is going to be great in front of Coatsy and Dorney and
Timmy. Yeah, right,
So he gets done with the press conference, and he makes his way over, and he's still, it's pure recognition. He comes my way. They say, hey, Herb, how are you? Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
No way.
Jeff Jackson. Who was coach of Notre Dame, I think, at the time.
Coatsy grilling.
That is Herb. I learned a lot in a year with him, a lot. And then Robbie, just quickly, the reason why I'm in Philadelphia, the rumors were the Devils were leaving town last year. So in the playoffs, we played, I believe it was Rochester again. We're on the way home. Might have been Binghamton. We're on the way home. And he's got all the players coming up to go over their summer workout routines. And he gets done a little early, so he hauls me over. And I didn't even work for the team. I worked for the radio station. But he hauls me over, and he says, so what are you going to do? And I said, well, I've already sent tapes to Anaheim and Florida. They were the two expansion teams that year. And if I hear of any other openings, because I hear the Devils might be leaving. And he kind of says, yeah, I think they're leaving. So he said, but what about all the other teams? There were 22 other teams at the time. And I said, well, if I hear of openings, I'll send tapes there. He goes, and I'll clean this up because Robbie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He says, no, how about the other teams? Send stuff to them. I go, Robbie, most of that ends up in a circular file. Nobody sees it. Back then it wasn't. You put an email out either. Back then it was, tapes, audio tapes.
Right. Right.
And he said, you should send them to all the teams. And I fought him on it because that's just who I am. But then when I got back home, I said, he might be right. So I made 22 or however audio tapes. I had to listen to way too much of myself. The same stuff over and over again. But anyway, I sent them all out. I ended up getting the Anaheim job, or at least was negotiating with them over the summer. And while I was negotiating, I'm on the phone with Ken Wilson from the Mighty Ducks back then. They told me it's job's mine, let's do a contract. And I'm working for the Utica Bulldogs of the Colonial Hockey League just to pass time, get a check. And if I didn't get an NHL job, I would have done that, but probably had to get out of the business, to be honest with you, because I wasn't going to make enough money. I was now married. I didn't want one of those left hooks or right crosses.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, right.
So I knew I was going to have to make more money than I could make in the Colonial Hockey League. So this was really it for me. I had to give it a shot. And Anaheim looked like it was going to work out. So I'm literally talking to them on the phone, and the secretary comes in from the Bulldogs and puts down one of those pink notes says, line two, Mark Piazza, Philadelphia Flyers.
I said, pizza.
Yeah, pizza. And I said, what do they want? It didn't click to me at all.
Right.
So I hung out with Ken. We still didn't have a deal because they had, you know, they had a lot going on, expansion team. They were going to get me the paperwork. And Mark says, hey, Mark Piazza, Philadelphia Flyers. Jim, how are you? I said, I'm great. What can I do for you? He said, well, we've had some changes here. Mike Emmerich's going to leave, and Gene Hart's going to go back to television, and our radio job is open. And we have heard your tape, and we're really interested. So one of those tapes that I never would have sent got me the job. I laughed when he said that. And I figured he's going to think I'm crazy. Why am I laughing? He goes, I know why you're laughing. You're talking with the Ducks. So they already knew I was talking with the Mighty Ducks.
Oh.
But anyhow, they whisked me down to Philly, took me to the saloon, all this stuff. And by the time I got back to Philly, they had a contract waiting on the fax machine. And I chose Philly over Anaheim for a lot of reasons. And, of course, because they had Lindros and we're going to win a cup before the Ducks.
Right.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Wrong. But yeah. I certainly don't regret it. It was a great decision. It's why I'm here 2 years in radio and then to television. But those three coaches, I mean, Tommy Herb, and Robbie all had profound influences on me. My Utica days were great. But amazing stories.
Too. Amazing people, that you work with.
Yeah, that's very fortunate.
Yeah,
starting your pro career off with a bang.
Yeah, and then I got to work 2 years with Coatsy, which topped all that. So,
well, I was going to say your football story almost reminded me of Coatsy when he blocked a shot by accident and had a breakaway, but pulled his hammy.
Yes,
and he had to dump it.
He played dump and chase hockey on a breakaway.
Yes,
that there is video of that somewhere.
No way.
Well, it was an NHL game. He was with the Red Wings.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, they played the Islanders.
God, I forgot about that.
We desperately tried to find the footage of it, but it's got to be somewhere. It was an NHL game. Yeah, he says it. Coach told us to play dump and chase, but in reality, I think it was his groin.
It was his groin
and couldn't make his way in on the breakaway.
He wasn't in that good a shape? Is that what he's trying to say?
Well, Coach, dehydrated?
You're in the minors, you're doing stuff, you're in college, but then you make it to the big time. And what happened is I came down, my wife had a job up in Utica, so I had to find a place to live.
Yep.
First month I was in a hotel, but then, you can only do that for so long. Well, Coatsy at the time was separated from his wife, lovely Lynn, and he was living in Clarkie's place in Ocean City on the shore. Clarkie was working for the Panthers at the time. So Clarkie let him live there. So Coatsy asked me to come down there and live with him. So I spent 2 months living with Coatsy and survived.
Barely. The fact that you're
barely
here
survived.
Doing this show.
But I'll tell you this story. Coatsy, I couldn't keep up with him. I'd go out with him once in a while, but not every night. So one night he's out. I'm doing who knows what, trying to get ready for the season, my very first season in the NHL. And the phone rings, so I pick it up, and there's a female on the other end, and she said, who's this? I said, Jim. Jim who? Jim Jackson. Who are you? I'm Coatsy's new partner. He says, what? Have him call me. Bang. I said, I'm assuming that was Lynn, but she wasn't very nice to me.
Right.
And so Coatsy gets back, and I say, Coatsy, I think I met your wife on the phone. She didn't sound too happy. You might want to call her. So he calls her, and I forgot to say broadcast partner.
You just said partner.
Oh, no.
So Lynn thought it was more of a relationship.
No way. Wow.
We laugh about that.
Oh, that is hilarious.
God, it's the absolute best. I love it. But she really, she thought maybe it was more than just a broadcast partner. So we had to explain, no, we're on the air together. So we survived that, and then eventually I bought a house, which I still live in today, and live happily ever after.
That is great.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And your relationship with Coatsy is still going strong.
Coatsy's amazing. Yeah. I mean, obviously, did the 2 years in radio. Then I went to TV, and I must say, have had the best broadcast partners, and I'll go through the litany, but it was Dorney then. Then Coatsy joined us on television, so I got to spend several years with Coatsy and then Jonesy as a three-man broadcast team. But I had Coatsy, who is just the life of the party, and taught me the ropes, what to do and what not to do. And then Gary Dornhofer was my first TV partner, broadcast partner. And he was like, I knew if ever you're in a war situation, you want someone else in your foxhole, it's Gary Dornhofer. I mean, he is just, you know what you're getting, a loyal guy, just great. And remember, he had been at Hockey Night in Canada. He'd been a lead analyst. So how lucky am I? I've worked with one of the lead analysts at Hockey Night in Canada, Gary Dornhofer. Then I move on to Keith Jones, who's one of the lead analysts for NBC and now TNT. And then when he couldn't do games, Bill Clement, who was a lead analyst for ESPN. So, I mean, how lucky can I be as far as people I've actually shared the booth with? And now when Jones can't do the games, it's Brian Boucher, who's
He's
awesome.
So, and, you know, Hartsey from time to time as well. So, I mean, I'm so lucky with the people I've worked with and have been completely blessed to the you have to have somebody you have some kind of chemistry with. And the chemistry is different. I mean, Bill and Jonesy cannot be further from each other in terms of their broadcast styles and their broadcast prep, if you want to call what Jonesy does prep. I mean, Bill is very prepared, and he'd have all these notes. Jonesy'd show up. I'd make copies of my notes and give them to him, and that's all I'd have in front of him.
Wow.
But Jonesy, don't let him fool you. He's dumb like a fox. I mean, he watches tons of hockey, and he knows what's going on. And I've never seen anybody who can watch a pregame skate or even a morning skate, but a pregame skate, and I always look for it, and I'm getting my numbers down and stuff like that, but he can see a way a guy's skating or a way a guy's favoring when he's shooting or a goalie, this or that. He sees stuff, and I'm like, really, from the warm-up? And almost all, it almost comes to fruition that this guy's not right. He's you know, he's going to have a great game, and he has a great game. And so he's really intuitive that way. And Bill, you know, he's going to the Hall of Fame here shortly. And I could not be happier. I mean, I remember about 4 years ago, I said to Mike Emmerich, we got to get Bill in the Hall of Fame. And he was still working, and Mike's on the board, and he got talking to them then. And, you know, then he retired, Bill, and I said to Mike, we really got to get him in. And so this year he goes in with Morgani. It's awesome. And so Bill, he's a wordsmith. And, you know, he is. And in the great voice. And so, I mean, I just could not be any luckier than those guys. I mean, Dorney and then those guys. And then, I've, you know, I had, you know, Taryn and people down on the ice, Chris Taryn. I mean, just a whole bunch of great people to work with. So it has been I have been very lucky that way, because I hear other broadcasters, I see other broadcasters who don't talk to their partners, you know, except for on the air, and don't like them, hate them. And you know, most of them are very professional and they make it work, but it's a lot harder to make it work, you know, if you don't you don't like the guy or like the person you're working with.
And you're going the distance. I mean, 26 years on TV, what, 2 years radio.
That's a long time. It's actually, this is going to be my 30th year.
30th year.
But it's 29th season because we lost the full season.
Oh, that's right.
It's 26 years of TV broadcast. This is my 27th year, 29th with the two radio years. So
that's crazy.
But 30th year, it was 30 years ago next August that I arrived. So this is kind of my 30th year here. I can't even believe that.
That's pretty wild.
And you know, I don't feel like I'm close to retiring, but when Mark Zumoff retires just before last year with the Sixers, and we started almost the same time. He's a little older than I am, not much. That kind of hit home. And then this year, Zach Hill. If you had Zach on here, he would be at it.
Well, he had to wait. Yeah. So
he's retired now. He'll be, and he has some stories.
Yes.
Whether he's willing to tell them, I don't know. I got to get a hold of him before he does it, though, so he doesn't
see he's one of my favorite people.
Me too. We started the same day.
No way.
Same exact day. I walked into the old Coliseum, and we bumped into each other in the press room. And I said, I'm Jim Jackson. It's my first day. I'm Zach Hill. It's my first day. Wow. And so when he retires, and he is my age, basically, a year older. I always rib him about that. But it is like, I'm that much closer to the end than I am the beginning. I didn't think that, feel that, but it's reality, you know. So, and then I just was in Utica for a ceremony, and I realized, like, I was in Utica for 30 years, and now I've been in Philadelphia for 30 years.
Wow.
Like, first half of life, second half of life, Syracuse in between, but that's all part of Utica, really, the upstate New York thing. And I just, it doesn't seem like I've been here as long as I was from birth, basically, to when I got the job here. That seemed like a longer 30 years than the 30 years here.
Yeah.
Where does the time go? I mean, I knew you as a little
crazy.
Kid, for crying out
loud. I mean, I know. It's it's amazing how fast it goes. You know, I was 25 years there.
Yeah.
And my first year, I was actually in Florida. It's funny you were in for
that
job, because I was with Mr. Clark. He gave me a job right out of college.
He still calls him Mr. Clark.
Yeah, right.
With my dad. And so lucky, like you were saying, so fortunate to do what I did for so long. But it goes by like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. How quick it goes.
Watching Timmy when he was on here with you guys, and I think he's right. I talked about this with him. Somebody had told me we're the longest running radio TV play-by-play duo. I think the only one close would be Anaheim, maybe Steve Carroll, who had a year here. And John Ahlers or Kenny Cal and Ken Daniels in Detroit have been there a long time. But we're close. I'm looking forward this year to getting back to going down into the room and talking to players. Being able to actually socialize a little bit. I don't overdo that. It's very important for broadcasters not to overdo that because you don't want it to impact the broadcast. But it's also good to get to know the people. So looking forward to that.
You talk about going back down to the room. I had a question for you because Merrill Reese, who does
legend
in Philadelphia with the Eagles, I laugh a lot because if I have the Eagles game on and I'm driving, he doesn't hold back.
No.
If JJ is running for that, how could he not get into the end zone? Well, his pants were. Well, it doesn't matter. You know, like, it makes me laugh. Because,
thanks for bringing that story back up.
Sorry, but no, but it's funny because, like, a guy will make a mistake.
Oh.
And, I mean, he just says it point blank. And I'm like, God, does he ever have to be around the boys? Yeah. Because, like, how would that work?
And, you know, and the worst I've done it, I think, with a goalie who lets in a soft goal, I might say he'd like to have that one back or whatever.
Right.
But I don't. I try not to. I mean, I will say this. I'm calling the game. So if Ivan Provorov turns the puck over and it leads to a goal or even a scoring chance, I'm just calling it. I'm giving the what.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, Jonesy or Bill or Bush or whoever I'm working with can get into the why. And if it's just a terrible play, they can say it. Yeah. I'm not going to characterize it. I might say bad giveaway. If it's an obviously bad giveaway, it's a giveaway. I might say bad. But
yeah.
But I'm just calling the game. But I'm not going to say, oh, he was checked if he wasn't checked, if it was just an unforced error, right?
Yeah.
So there's a tight – you certainly keep it professional. You certainly – we want the Flyers to win. I mean, I'm not going to hide that fact. I mean, I'm broadcasting to 97% Flyers fans. There's some that aren't. But so I know the broadcast is tailor-made for them. A, they want more information on their team, and B, they probably want more excitement on their goals than the other team's goals, that kind of thing. So there is that, but there is also you have to tell it like it is. Now, Merle lets his emotions go to places I couldn't go.
Yeah.
I mean, my emotions go there, but I can't let it come out on the air. It's just a different setup. You know, I've never – maybe I could, but I don't want to test that.
Yeah.
Right. No, so, that's what I mean. It just makes me laugh because I'll hear him and I'm like, wow.
I'll tell you an interesting story.
He's not holding back.
I was in a symposium with Merle, Scott Fransky, and Mark Zumoff at the time. Zoo was still working. The four of us, play-by-play guys at Temple, all these students. And they were asking questions. One of the students says, for the entire panel, do you guys consider yourself homers? And the moderator said, Jim, we'll start with you. And I said, well, I think all of us in this panel would say to you that we're homers to some degree. And Merle was sitting next to me, and I could sense some uncomfortability when I said that, right? Yeah. So I went on and talked about what I just said. You know, you got to be more for your team and 97% of the audience, all that stuff. And said, and so clearly, if you turn on a Flyers television broadcast, you're going to know I'm a broadcaster for the Flyers pretty early on. And I mean, with Gene Hart, you knew 5 words in because of just his tone of voice.
Right.
When the Flyers were winning, he was in a better mood. I mean, and I grew up listening to Bob Murphy do the Mets. He was a baseball announcer. Same thing. I could tell with Bob whether the Mets were winning or losing 5 seconds
tone,
in. To me, that's a badge of honor. I don't look at that as a criticism, but I could feel without looking at him that Merle wasn't happy with that. So as soon as I got done, Merle grabs the mic. He goes, first of all, I'm not a homer. And he was really mad that I classified him as such. And he went on to say, I will criticize my team. Well, I wasn't saying we don't criticize our teams. I was just saying we take our team's angles. There are those who probably feel Merle's even more of a homer than some of us because he just, you know, when something goes wrong for the Eagles that he doesn't think should have gone wrong, he lets you hear about it, which I think is part of the reason why he's so popular.
Right.
But, I mean, I guess really Merle and I probably just disagreed with what a homer is, maybe.
Yeah. Right.
And I didn't mean to offend him, but he clearly wasn't happy with that because I'm not a homer. But I think, and I know Scott Fransky's very balanced in his call, but he's still, I'm sure, the other night, if you could hear his call over his analyst, you know, you'd know that he's a little more excited about the Phillies making the playoffs than not making it. I mean, that's just the way it is
right,
in the hometown.
Of course, yeah.
So to me, that's being a homer. To Merle, maybe it isn't.
Yeah.
But I thought that's interesting.
That's funny.
Bring Merle Merle's the best. I mean, I tell you, so much respect. He's been doing that. He's coming up in 50 years.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Amazing.
don't know. I just always chuckle when I have it on because no matter what, even if they're winning, if this guy does something wrong, he just gives it to him.
Yeah. I mean, I ride the planes and buses and I'm in the locker room with these guys. I'm just not strong enough mentally maybe to be able to do that and then ask these guys questions like,
Of
course.
So, and I know, maybe you can answer this because I'm never in a locker room where it's just players. I've never played the game. But I'm assuming you guys, despite the fact that many of you say you don't read the newspaper clippings or now on the internet or hear about talk show people criticizing you or hear about broadcasters, you hear it, right?
Sure.
And it's got to bother you. You're a human being.
Yeah.
If someone say, so knowing that, if I blast a player above and beyond what I should in terms of just calling the game, if I go into that locker room, I'm going to expect that player to not be very happy with me. I mean, my first allegiance is to the viewer. My second would be to the people in the organization. But the viewer, they're the ones watching
sure.
us. So yep. I can't be completely sugarcoat and all that. People say I'm a homer because I criticize the officials. But if you really listen to our broadcast, we criticize the officials when they get one wrong the other way, too.
Yeah.
It's just the hometown. People don't hear that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'll give you a really good story about how it's what people hear. It's all in what they hear. John Davidson, longtime analyst for the Rangers and for Fox and ESPN, was doing the Rangers-Flyers series in 1997. And you remember a game at the, I don't know what it was called then, but the Wells Fargo Center, might have been the Coors State Center then, where Gretzky had a hat trick, but there was a whole bunch of brawls. It was a wild game, afternoon game on national TV. So we didn't do the game. And Coach and I were doing a post-game show on the radio afterwards, and John Davidson did the game for Fox. And we get all these calls from people saying, how can they let John Davidson do the game nationally? He's a Rangers announcer letting him do a Rangers, and he was so pro-Rangers. And without seeing the broadcast, I defended JD. I said, well, you know, I know John Davidson. I've watched his work. He's a true pro. He's one of the best in the business. I can't imagine he was that biased. That night, I get a call from John Davidson. And he said, hey, I just wanted to call and thank you for having my back. I was listening to the show as I drove out of town, and they were coming at me pretty good, and you backed me up. And I said, JD, I didn't even hear the show, but I know your work, like as I said on the air. And I know you were right down the middle or as close to it as you can be. He says, funny thing is, I got to like Trenton, and I started to lose the Philly radio station, so it turned the fan in York on, and I was getting blasted for overcompensating and being pro-Flyers.
Come on.
So, and that truly is, and I know this, we're all fans, right? You guys have teams you root for.
Yeah.
Football is probably the one we're most passionate about because it's once a week and we get to see all the games. Well, when I'm watching a game and the announcer's doing the game, he never says good stuff about my team. He's always saying good stuff about it. I mean, it's just natural, right?
Yeah.
So people are used to me and Jonesy calling a game or Timmy and Coatsy calling a Flyers game, and we have an obvious slant toward the orange and black. As I said, it's what we're paid to do. Doesn't mean we need to be unprofessional. I don't like getting into the we or anything like that. We're not part of the team, but we're definitely Flyers broadcasters. So people are used to that. So when a national network gets a game, and they're getting a lot of them this year, 13, more and more as time goes by, which is a pet peeve of mine, but they pay the bucks. That's what happens. When they get it, invariably I get all kinds of tweet messages saying, where are you? Where are you guys? We need you guys. These guys are so pro-Pittsburgh or pro-Chicago or pro-Rangers, whoever we're playing. And, you know, I'm like, I appreciate it. Wish I was doing the game, but, you know, these guys are doing the best they can. And I know this firsthand because I did a couple games for NBC with Flyers games, but I was doing it to the Tampa market and the Flyers market and the national market. And I played it down the middle.
Right.
And Steve Stamkos scored a couple goals that game, and I got very excited for Steve Stamkos. That's what I'm paid to do. I'm working now for National Network, and I got killed.
Oh, I'm
Flyers
sure. Fans.
What's wrong with JJ? He's getting excited about Lightning goals. He's not talking about the Flyers enough because I had a different role. So they don't understand. Our broadcast, 70-30, maybe 75-25, 80-20 Flyers.
Yep.
National broadcast is usually 50-50. There are a couple that might go a little more the other way if the other team's playing really well or whatever. You're going to talk more about the team that's winning, but they're going to hear that, and they're just not going to like it as much. So, I mean, in reality, I wish we could do a local feed audio for national broadcasts.
Oh, yeah, that'd be nice.
You know, they use the SAP button for Spanish broadcasts. Can't there be an alternate audio button? And if people – they'd have to do the work. They'd have to push the extra – button to get the audio on, but they'd still be watching the same station, so the ratings wouldn't be affected.
Yeah,
for
right.
advertisers' sake. Maybe you get somebody to underwrite the local audio, so
yeah.
there's money involved, because you know money has to be involved to make it work. I hear about this show making all kinds of money. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, maybe we can get to that someday. Pete Weber, the broadcaster for the Nashville Predators, brought that point up to me many years ago, and we never got anywhere with it, but short of that, we're just not going to be doing the games when they're on nationally, and you're going to have to deal with the fact that they're doing it 50-50. They're not doing it 75-25 yeah. Flyers.
Right.
A little different animal.
Yeah, for sure.
So you got, switching gears here a little bit, your own coaching
program? Yeah, broadcast coaching.
Podcast coaching, yeah.
Phillies, after 14 great years with the Phillies, they were done with me during the pandemic, and I had all this time on my hands. Now, over the years, I've mentored a lot of kids. In fact, the new voice of the New Jersey Devils, Bill Spalding, actually, I did some work with him. So now you know you're old when some of the kids you mentored are making it to the league. So I did some here and there, you know, phone calls and going over tapes, but nothing really organized. But once I got all this extra time, I said, let's get into coaching. And we put this program together where I do 3 1-hour one-on-one sessions via Zoom. I'm thinking about doing it in person now that we're, you know, somewhat back to that. But right now it's still Zoom, and I tailor make it to that person. It doesn't have to be play-by-play. It can be, you know, anchoring. It can be sideline reporting. It can be talk show hosting. It can be podcasting, whatever, broadcasting of any sort. And I've had people from all those various roles, do the program, and it's been awesome. I mean, I've had upwards of 50 kids, I think,
nice.
Do the program, and it's just awesome to see some of them move on and get jobs, and some go off in other directions, but they stay in touch, and it's great. So you do 3 1-hour sessions, and then I'm your mentor for as long as you want me. You can call me, text me when you have questions, or, you know, if you want to go over tapes down the road, we can do other sessions or whatever. But it's been great. It's JimJacksonBroadcasting.com. Awesome. All the information's there.
Great.
And I also do voiceover work, which is on that site. Looking to get into some public speaking to tell my great, you know, pants falling down story.
Yeah. You got to.
Persevere.
Yeah.
But Cameo, I do all these other things. I'm going to do little YouTube hits during the year. So it's all on that website.
That's why we couldn't get a hold of him.
Oh,
forever.
He's too busy.
I know who to call now.
You guys are competition now. No. I am hardly competition for this podcast.
Listen.
It's way up here.
I just call Bernie.
Yeah,
it's all over. You want a combo to the head?
Yeah, it's all over. And she would listen to
jab
you. She loves
jab
you to death. Said divorce him and come with that, she would, I think. And she would also oblige with the right hook and left hook.
Yeah, right.
It's been great. I could not have anticipated the coaching being as rewarding as it is. I thought it was just going to be like, okay, they'll go their merry way, but almost all the kids stay in touch.
And it's cool.
I have this kid who just went to Syracuse. I've been working with him since his junior year of high school, and he goes to Syracuse. Now, I went to Syracuse back in the early 80s when the football team was really bad. And they got a little bit better toward the mid-80s. Actually went to a Sugar Bowl right after I graduated and all that. But then they've been really bad for many years. He goes there. They're 5-0 and ranked 22nd. He's been there a month. Do you realize how lucky you are?
Yeah, right.
It
right.
might not last very long. They have North Carolina State here coming up. I'm telling you, I'm not going to give you his name, but I think I'll be in my couch or in my lounge chair or whatever, retired, watching him on network
really?
TV.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then there's many others who I think are going to make it. And it's fun. It's almost you have all these, I mean, I have my two kids. Clearly, I want them to be successful more than anybody. But now I have all these people of their age, basically, and older. I mean, there's no way. I don't want people to think it's just for 20-somethings or teens. I have a 58-year-old guy who's doing a streaming service for games down in Florida for junior hockey. And he created this kind of network where he gets to do the games. So you don't have to be a young person to do this. But many of them are college age and so forth, and kind of similar to my kids' age. And now I'm watching on them trying to get their jobs. And I have all these people I'm trying to help them get jobs. It's really been rewarding. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's awesome. There's so much opportunity with the technology and the platforms now for people to find their voice.
Every college football game is broadcast now, right? When I was around, I'm a little older than you guys, but I mean, there were three stations. It was like ABC, NBC, CBS, and then Fox came along, and then ESPN came along, but there just weren't that many games broadcast. Now you have way more kids wanting to do it. So while there's more availabilities and opportunities, there's also more competition. And now podcasting, and I mean, I say this to anybody for advice. The best advice is you have to get reps.
Yeah.
You get better at broadcasting by doing it. And now you can do it no matter where you are, just like this.
Yeah.
You can put a camera up and create your own podcast or YouTube show or whatever. And you could have zero subscribers, zero viewers, but you're getting reps in front of a camera.
That's
it. You're going to watch it back yourself, and you're going to get better. I'm sure you guys feel your podcasts are better now. What is this, episode 80?
89.
I'm sure it's better than episode one, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, guest notwithstanding, but I mean, you guys are better. That's what happens. And so you get reps. And there's no blueprint to success in this business. Another not-so-quick story. When I was in Utica, once I got to be the sports director, I had to hire somebody to take over the job I had created, the weekend thing. And so this kid from New York comes up and seemed really good. I thought maybe even a little too good, but he took the job and everything's going along great. About 3 months later, he walks into my office. I hate to tell you this, but I'm going back to New York. And I'm like, what? Everything's going great. Because I also knew I was going to have to do both jobs for a little while. Which is a lot of work. Yeah. But and so, you know, he just couldn't deal with upstate New York living because he was from New York City. And it's a big difference. It's small town versus big city. He wanted to go back to New York. So he went back to New York. I stayed in Utica. I did the old hone your craft in a small market, get better, and then jump to a big market, as I did in Philadelphia. He went back to New York and basically took a job as a PA. He used to tell me sweeping floors and getting coffee for people. That was the first job. And he did that for a little while. Before you knew it, they let him ride the board a little bit. They let him, you call it producing, but he's just pushing buttons. And then before long, they let him write some for the update guy. And then maybe a year after that, he started doing some of the updates. And then we started doing some of the updates during their pre and post game shows for some of the sports they covered. And then all of a sudden, he was hosting the pre- and post-game show for the New York Giants. And then all of a sudden, Jim Gordon retires in, I think, 2000. And he becomes the voice of the New York Giants. And he's been the voice of the New York Giants for 22 years, Bob Papa.
Wow.
Who I just saw the other day. Went up to a Giants game, and he's doing the games. And,
amazing.
So we took completely opposite routes. One, and Timmy Saunders will talk to you about this, a lot of people jump hopscotch all over the place on their way to their eventual destination. And then there are those who go to their hometown and find low level jobs and kind of just climb the ladder if they're willing to have that patience, and they can make it too. So there really is no blueprint for success in this business other than getting reps and
staying committed obviously.
And if it's a dream, hey, you guys, this is awesome. This podcast is awesome. You guys are basically taking something that is a passion, hockey or whatever subject matter you talk about, and you're finding ways to monetize it, finding ways to make it either a side hustle or a job, right? And we have too many people in this country, in this world, who are at best bored, at worst miserable in their jobs.
That's the truth.
And that carries over into your personal life if you're miserable in your job. I tell all the people who come to me, if you have a passion for broadcasting, or if you have a passion for accounting, if you have a passion for being a veterinarian, follow that passion, and you're going to have bumps. There are going to be speed bumps along the way. You're going to have people tell you you can't make it. I had my own mom tell me, you're crazy, be a vet. I had a sports director when I was in school at Syracuse who had just gotten an article written about him by SI saying he was a 9 out of 10 tell me that I'd never make it. You're going to have people tell you you're crazy, you're no good. You have to press on. You will know in your heart or between your ears, maybe both, when it's time to give it up. Hopefully that day never comes, but you will know. No one can tell you that you can't do it.
Yeah.
I used what that guy told me as motivation.
Yeah.
I mean, for 48 hours, don't get me wrong, I was thinking about changing my major and like, wow, this guy who we're all genuflecting in front of because he got this article written about him just told me I suck. I'm like, I had a minor in political science. Should I just switch over? Can you do that as a junior? I was seriously considering it, but then a couple days went by, I got great support from my roommates and so forth. And finally, I said, I'm not going to let this guy tell me that I can't make it.
Right.
I'm at Syracuse. I'm doing games on the air. Not many kids even get a chance to do that. I have to be at least halfway decent. And you try to build yourself back up. And then I said, I'm going to prove him wrong.
Yeah.
And I didn't meet that guy. Later, he was working out in San Francisco when I was working for the Phillies and played the Giants in the 2010 NLCS. And he got a hold of me and said, hey, can you come on the pregame show with me and we'll talk about the series? I said, absolutely. So we're sitting there before the show goes on. And I said, do you remember, I won't say his name, do you remember, because he's had a great career too, very talented guy. And do you remember telling me that I was never going to make it? He goes, what are you talking about? I said, yeah, you were a senior.
You were fueled my career.
You were a senior. I was a junior. You told me that I was okay, good enough to do college, but I didn't have it to make it, you know, in the big time with a, you know, major league team in any of the sports. And he said, I never said that. I said, you said it. And I want to thank you for saying it because you helped motivate me to make it. And he said, I never said it. But you're welcome.
Maybe I did.
But you are. I mean, you're going to have people.
Oh, for
people
sure.
People you respect say you're no good. And now with social media, I have people tell me that all the time. Anyhow, you know, you're no good. So, you know, you're going to get that. You have to have thick skin in this
business.
You have
to have thick skin.
But you have to have thick skin
in any business.
In life.
In life,
now, unfortunately, to some degree, but you do. But in this business in particular, you're out there. You're out front.
Yeah, you're putting yourself out there, obviously.
So just... if there's any advice outside of getting reps, it's that.
Yeah.
You know, have that dream, follow your passion, and at least when you get to be 40, 45, if you gave it a shot and it didn't work, you're not looking back saying, I could have tried that.
Yeah, yes. No doubt.
Or is was it on the waterfront? I could have been a contender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to be saying, I could have done that. I mean, and the only other regret I have is actually that I didn't enjoy the ride enough. When I was in Utica, so many stories, as we've shared some of them, and so many great people, I was so focused on getting to where I wanted to get that I didn't smell the roses at all on the way here.
Mm.
And I tell every kid that I talk to, do that, because the ride is just as fun, maybe even more fun than the destination.
100%.
So, and I know it's easy for me to say that now because I made it 30 years later, all that, but I just remember how desperate out of college you're like, what am I going to do? I got nothing. Yeah. And then you're making very little money for a long time in this business. You have to do that. You pay the dues.
Yeah.
And it's like, I can't do this for much longer. And, you know, then I get married and the team moves out of town and I'm looking at a $15,000 a year job as working for that Colonial Hockey League team there. They're actually a United Hockey League team. And I'm like, this isn't going to last long.
Yeah.
Left, cross, right hook.
Yeah.
This isn't going to last long. And, you know, you have these panic moments, but you push on.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, I was lucky and blessed to get the job here and have worked with so many great people. And we'll get that cup, hopefully, eventually.
Yeah.
Outside that, everything else has been just as I would have dreamed of. So
amazing.
You can live that dream too, right? Those people.
100%. Some wise words that believing in yourself, right? If you don't believe in yourself, no one will, right?
That's exactly right. I mean, I'm sure as a player, you had heard that too. I mean,
you have to. That's the essence of it all, right?
Yeah.
I mean, no matter what line of work you're in,
right?
If you don't have that, no one's going to believe in you. There's no confidence there, right?
So, and there's also, and Nasty, you can relate to this, our jobs, as great as they are, a player, equipment manager, broadcaster, there's lots of times where it's not glamorous and fun,
right.
Especially you. I mean, the hours you guys kept is amazing. And I'm talking about the work hours.
Right.
You also kept some other amazing hours.
Yeah, you know. Got to mix them in there. I heard they were Hall
strategic
of Fame
hours. Yeah.
They very wanna... much are. There's got to be a Hall of Fame for that. You and Coatsy are going to first class. You're going in.
I just said that to Chief yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, there's another one.
But anyway.
But, so, I mean, it's not all glitz and glory, right? But there's so much of it that is.
Sure.
And it's fun. And it's, if you're doing what you love, you'll be able to take all that other stuff.
100%.
And go for it. But persevere.
Absolutely. Yep. Before we let you go, I got to ask the broadcasting voice. Is something you had to...
I don't really know. I mean, for me, it was you know, having my pants fall down in a football run. That,
all of a sudden, the voice just came.
No, right? I mean, I don't even know if I had my voice. I was in eighth grade, probably hadn't completely.
Yeah.
But my father said, you know, the game is on and you're always talking about it anyhow. Why don't you go into broadcasting? And then, you know, I went into my puberty years and the voice
just came. Magically came.
I took some courses in college. I think one of my lowest grades came in a public speaking course.
Wow.
So a really tough professor. But, I mean, you can work on it.
Yeah.
But some of it is just natural. It's kind of like an athlete. I mean,
yeah.
They have certain athletic skills. They're the best of the best, and I'm certainly not saying I'm that, but the best of the best in terms of the athletes are also your hardest working athletes.
Right.
I mean, think of Sidney Crosby. The stories are legendary. I mean, the guy told me that he was once he missed a shot from in tight that could have tied a game late early in his career. Next day, the coach, I think it might have been Edzo, might have been coaching him then, or maybe it was Bielsma, but anyhow, said, nobody near the rink tomorrow. You guys have had a long, tough week. Nobody at the rink. Well, Sid got a hold of the person at the rink. They opened it up for him, turned the lights on, and he stacked wood in front of the net and left the littlest thing. And the guy said he just shot and shot and shot for hours. Like, he must have taken, you know, hundreds and hundreds of shots at that little hole that he missed, right?
Yeah.
And that's the great ones. Jerry Rice had his ridiculous workout thing up the hill.
Yeah.
You can go through all the greatest. I mean, Michael Jordan, we got an inside look at some of his stuff with the miniseries. I mean, it's the documentary. I mean, it's those are the greatest of the greats. They have the unbelievable talent, too, which some of us aren't blessed with. But if you have some talent and you work that hard, it's going to lead to good things.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you, JJ.
This has been
amazing.
Thanks so much. We're going
to have to bring you back on.
Probably the longest show you've ever had, too.
This is a great one.
That's great. We love it. We love having you, man.
I figure since I put you guys out for so long, I better give you
Yeah, make two episodes worth.
Yeah, that's right. Cut it in half. More with JJ next week, believe it or not.
No, we really do appreciate your time, buddy. Thanks so much.
Really, as far as this season goes, you know, a lot of negativity out there. I can't deal with that. It's for me, it's all about fixing, and I think that's the way John Tortorella approaches it.
Yeah.
Let's see how it plays out before we jump all over.
100%.
Yeah, 100%.
And, you know, they're going to be, as you said, Riley, I mean, they're going to be tougher to play against. They're going to be, I think, more of a Philadelphia kind of team.
Yeah.
And that's in no shot to Mike Yeo or the earlier coaches. Mike came into a situation that was untenable.
Tough situation.
So, and I think he's a very good coach, and glad that he landed in Vancouver. But Torts is, he's different, and he's probably a man made for this kind of situation.
Yeah.
So let's give him a chance first, and not just five games. As he said, mid-November is when most of his teams get his systems into muscle memory, and it becomes basically natural for them out on the ice. If, you know, we're rolling into Thanksgiving and Christmas and they're still losing game after game, then, you know, I think you're going to see some big-time changes. But give it some time.
Yeah.
This guy's a really good coach. And
he is.
There are some really good players here who have not had great years the last couple of years. I mean, if we get some of those players back to where they were and other the young guys take steps up, they might surprise some people. You never know.
All right, big thank you to Jim Jackson. Awesome guy. Appreciate him hopping on.
JJ. Great guy.
Been chasing him down for a while.
I know. He had some things he had to deal with, but we're really happy he joined us. Man, he's been here a long time.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, props to him for
knowing him a long time.
Grinding it out and staying with it. And I love his attitude towards it. And he
does a great job, too.
He really does.
He's really good.
Obviously passionate about it and is the main reason why he's still kicking.
Exactly.
Obviously, you gotta love what you do, no matter what job you're in. So big thanks to JJ. Appreciate you. Maybe we'll get him back on 2.0 somewhere down the line.
Yes.
And then, Nas, we're adding another segment to our weekly show.
All right.
We are.
I like hearing that.
Yeah. Ask us anything. Maybe not everything. Anything.
Kidding.
We threw it out there on social media last week and got a few questions to start off our first segment.
Okay.
I think Baller has got a few questions for us.
Yes,
here
sir.
Here we go, Baller.
We got Brandon Harper on Twitter. He asked Nasty, most high maintenance player to deal with and least high maintenance.
Ooh. Oh.
Wow, high maintenance. Now you get me in trouble here. high maintenance. I'm not sure. I was lucky.
Prong Daddy?
You know, he wasn't that high maintenance. It's just I had to do all of his sticks.
Okay. Right.
So, like, and his were a little bit of a – it took some time. It so did Jake Voracek's. I guess the guys that I had to do their sticks for them with, like, the wood knobs in them and then shave them down, that's probably the most because I was really fortunate not to have anybody that was crazy. Like, you hear the stories about Mark Messier moving his skate blades all the time. Bus James, JVR's balls a little bit with his – he likes to shift his blades a little bit, but it's more about the shivs he puts in there. But I was lucky enough not to really have anyone too high maintenance. The least high maintenance guy would be you. I mean, you didn't even need a roll of tape because you never taped
same
your
tape
stick.
Job the whole year.
Lots of guys. I was lucky, man. I've heard horror stories from some equipment guys, you know, and we'd always make fun of them. But I was really lucky, I have to say. But you might be the guy because you literally didn't tape your sticks unless I really yelled at you.
Yeah, I know. I remember that. And and grinding my wheels, I think I probably.
I don't think you knew if I did or not.
No,
or
I don't.
If, you know, Harry did them.
When
or
you're
not
sitting
or
in the sitting on the bench, you're sitting in the penalty box, it don't really matter, does it?
Well, I mean, you got to have good edges, bro.
Yeah, you do. You're right.
Good edges.
You're right. Well, I appreciate you grinding. Yep. Without telling me.
No problem.
Next baller.
Friend of the show, Christopher Mayer, he asked, favorite Jake Voracek moment on the bench?
I think I may have talked about that earlier. It's one of my favorites. seeing Jimmy Vesey last night back with the Rangers when he was coming into the league, I remember he was kind of being chopped around. I don't know if that's the word you want to use, but he was like going to take the best offer, but he ends up going to New York. And if you remember back, LeBron James, when he left Cleveland the first time, he had the press conference. I'm taking my talents to South Beach or whatever he said. And so VC's lining up for faceoff, and Jakey's yelling at him, "Who do you think you are, fucking LeBron James?" So he was calling him LeBron the whole game because of him, like, chopping around to see where he was going to go.
Right.
I could give you a million Jake stories, but that one was actually funny because he called him LeBron the whole game, and I just kept laughing every time he said it.
Oh, man, just hearing Jake talk
makes me
laugh.
That too.
Man, just looking at him, just get all fired up, just makes you want to laugh, but he is a beauty.
He's a beauty.
We got one more. It's a little bit of a two-for-one. This one's from Instagram, The Furious Furia.
Mm-hmm.
What was the best experience / favorite memory as an equipment manager? That's for Nasty. And for Riley, what was your toughest fight? We'll start with Nasty.
Oh, man. Lots of really good memories. Winning two American League championships, Calder Cups. Getting to do the Olympics was probably one of the greatest things I've ever been able to do. Worked with Torts. The Olympics was probably one of the best things ever. And going to the finals in the Stanley Cup finals with you, Riles, and even though we came up short, it was, you know, you just never forget those times. And, and even at the Olympics that year, you know, we lost in overtime, the gold medal game, but it was still, like, looking back, like, I can't even believe I was there. So that would have to go with the Olympics.
Yeah, I don't blame you. That is big time.
Yeah.
Nast. For me, toughest fight, I mean, they're all tough. There was no easy ones. Trying to think if I should go with my biggest ass kicking. Brash probably kicked my ass, probably the worst. You know, I'd throw him up there as obviously the toughest fight. I mean, I fought him a bunch. It was obviously never easy. George the Rock, Brian McGrattan, Colton Orr, Eric Goddard. I mean, there's obviously a bunch of them that were all in that same, like, ultra heavyweight type of bracket. But I think Brash kicked my ass the worst in Philly there that one night. I think that's the one. But they're all tough. There was no easy nights.
You're undersized. Those guys were huge. So, yeah, they were definitely all tough. You didn't get many nights where you were fighting a guy the same size as
I know.
So.
And even on those nights, I didn't take it for granted because, you know, those guys could chuck them. Different type of style of fighting. Yeah, so. Yeah. But I think, you know, Brash gave it to me the worst. But Yeah. A lot of tough ones for sure. Yeah,
that's for sure.
All right. And I think that's a wrap, Nast. Episode 89 in the books.
I know. You want to say anything about maybe liking and subscribing?
Well, let's like and subscribe our YouTube channel.
Comments if you want.
Comment, absolutely.
We love it all.
We appreciate you. We'll see you next week for episode 90.
Let's go.
All right.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This season, prepare for every season with the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. These shoes were made for adventures in rain, shine, mist, or snow. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase.
Are you ready for playoff hockey? Well, listen up, because I've got something for you. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of the questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. Simple, right? But there's more. You got to decide if the total for the game is going to go over or under a certain amount, and the strategy doesn't stop there. Next up, you're picking which player is going to light the lamp first, and finally, you got to predict which period in the game is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That is all up to you. Now let's talk prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. That's right. Treat yourself to some nation gear or even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the round winners, cash money. Cold, hard cash. We're putting real dough in your pockets simply for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. It's game time, folks. Head over to games.dailyfaceoff.com now and prove your puck prowess.